I'm Dr. Janelle Anderson, former college professor turned manager in a large corporation turned entrepreneur. And not just any entrepreneur. I've made it my life's work to make organizational life more effective and fulfilling. So welcome to Working Conversations, the podcast where we digest and translate research and ideas on workplace dynamics and serve up to you the most interesting and actionable strategies to make your workplace conversations and your relationships more effective, productive, and influential. If you're looking for proven tools for your workplace toolbox, you're in the right place. Now, let's get after it. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Working Conversations podcast, where we talk all things leadership, business communication, and trends in organizational life. I'm your host, Dr. Janelle Anderson. As we continue the ride of ever-evolving workplace dynamics post-pandemic, one thing is crystal clear. Virtual meetings are here to stay. Whether you are a seasoned remote worker or someone working a hybrid schedule, virtual meetings have become a given in the professional landscape. Today, I'll share some insightful tips backed by the latest research to help you not only survive, but thrive in the realm of virtual collaboration and Zoom fatigue. So grab your favorite cup of coffee or tea, because we're inclusive here, and settle into your virtual office chair, and let's explore how to make those digital gatherings not only bearable, but genuinely effective and engaging. Now, we humans communicate even when we're silent. We make meaning out of everything that's being said and everything that we can take in with our eyes and ears and even things like gestures. So everything we're taking in, including dozens and dozens of nonverbal cues, such as if someone's leaning in or leaning out, or if they're gesturing like they want to take the next turn, or if they're inhaling quickly like they're about to interrupt. When we're face to face, we take in all of these cues. There are so many of them. Now, when we're on Zoom or Teams or WebEx all day long, we are missing those cues. Even if our colleagues have their cameras on, we can't necessarily see if they're fidgeting or losing interest, nor can we tell if they're bored or irritated or otherwise. And the more people in the meeting, the smaller the boxes get. That is, the multiple video feeds on the screen, Brady Bunch style, get smaller and smaller. Now, if you've listened to episode 149, The Power of Artificial Intelligence, or AI, to Transform Meetings, you know that there will be some new features coming that will help you catch up if you fall behind. But there are many things that you can do to drive engagement and prevent Zoom fatigue in the first place. Now, if you've listened to episode 136, Stop Multitasking, you've got a few of those ideas maybe under your belt already because you've heard me talk about the human brain can't multitask, which is exactly what people are trying to do, or at least attempting on those Teams meetings. And it contributes to our Zoom fatigue and exhaustion while detracting from getting things done in the meeting. When we're paying continuous partial attention to something like, say, a Teams meeting that you're in while you're also trying to answer your email, it's extra taxing on your brain. So again, you've probably heard me talk about the primary task and the secondary task, and really thinking about paying continuous partial attention to multiple things is the same thing. We're not giving something our full attention. And it's exhausting to try to do multiple things at the same time. And nor can we do those things very well if we're trying to do multiple things at the same time. So again, I'm sure you've heard of Zoom fatigue. And in the past, the research on Zoom fatigue, as it's commonly called, focused on self-report data. That is, participants in research studies were given questionnaires to assess their own recollections of how they felt, how they performed, et cetera, in the video conference environment, regardless of whether it was Zoom or Teams or prior to that, even Skype or WebEx or whatever they happen to be using. For example, back in October 2020, the Pew Research Center study that surveyed over 10,000 workers to find out if they were feeling worn out by a video conference, and about 40 of them were. But of course, if you're working with 10,000 people in your research study, that has to be self-report data. You can't actively observe or watch 10,000 different people experience a meeting. Now, according to some research that came out of Stanford University, video calls lead to fatigue due to intense, excessive, close-up eye contact, because most of us have been conditioned to look into the camera to make that illusion of eye contact. But that can lead to an exhausting feeling like you're having a bunch of people stare at you the whole time during the meeting when that eye contact is excessive and intense. But we do it because it makes a connection. That's why we do it. So I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying that that's one of the reasons that Zoom fatigue exists like it does. Another finding from that same Stanford study was that seeing yourself on camera during video chats is exhausting. And there's a reduction in mobility as well. Because if you think about when you're in a face-to-face meeting, let's say your back hurts and you need to get up and stretch. I mean, it's easy to stand and stretch and move out of your chair because you don't feel like everybody's staring at you or watching you. And maybe you do stand up and move to a different location because you're able to stretch your back out. In fact, I was just in a face-to-face meeting just this morning with one of my clients and her leadership team. And she was telling us how she was busy with something all weekend that was physically intense, project in her home, and that her back was starting to hurt. So she stood up for a time and leaned on the back of her chair. And we just feel more comfortable doing that when we're face-to-face than when we're on cameras in a Zoom or a Teams meeting. So we're just not getting up to move about much. So again, most of the studies in the past have relied again on that self-report data. But a couple of recent studies put empirical data to the test, real data, not just self-report data. Researchers at the University of Applied Sciences, Upper Austria, used brain scans and heart scans to see whether there were any concrete neurological findings about Zoom fatigue and what it is that it exhausts us in those video conference meetings. So there's another study that I'll refer to later on, but first we're going to talk about this initial study. And indeed, there were some concrete neurological findings at play. So what they found out was that video conference technology makes us more exhausted than face-to-face events. They found that with 50 minutes of video conferencing, that is 5-0, so almost an hour, they were able to see significant changes in physiological differences and that the subjects were more fatigued, and they had observable data on this. So participants' brain and heart readings indicated that video conferencing caused higher levels of fatigue, sadness, and inattentiveness than in-person participation did. So those video conference participants, less attentive, less engaged than their face-to-face counterparts. Now, to be fair, the researchers had a very small sample size. Just a few dozen participants were hooked up to the EEG and ECG sensors to monitor what was happening in their brain and in their heart. And as good researchers, they do recommend larger studies be initiated to validate that initial research that they found from their smaller studies. So they want lots and lots more participants to be involved in research like this. So this is an emerging area of research, and I'll continue to watch as it unfolds. But in today's session, I promised I was going to give you very specific tactical things that you could do to reduce Zoom fatigue and increase engagement in your meetings. I've got six of them for you today, and I'm going to ground my first recommendation in the research that I was just mentioning from that Austrian study. So the first thing is take breaks. The research that I was referring to found that the negative effects of video conferencing were present after 50 minutes, so 5-0, so just under an hour. So accordingly, don't wait that long. You're going to want to take breaks 20 or 30 minutes in, and you don't necessarily have to stop the meeting agenda and have a formal break where people step away or log out. You could, though, but simply doing some seated exercise partway through the meeting can certainly refocus people's attention and keep their interest and engagement up, especially if they were multitasking. They'll whip their head back around to find out what it is you're doing. So one of my favorite things that I like to do, and if you're watching here on YouTube, you're going to see me do this. And if you've ever been in a video class with me, like a half-day training where I'm doing something like this, or even a virtual keynote, I do this because I want to keep people's attention focused on what we're doing in the session. So I will say something like, if you are comfortable and able, let's all do this together. Let's take 5 shoulder rolls backward. And I'll do it. In fact, if you're watching here on YouTube, you're seeing me do it now. And then I'll say 5 shoulder rolls forward. Now, to be inclusive, I always like to say, if you're interested and have this available to you, because not everybody might want to, and maybe not everybody is able to. They have a back injury or shoulder pain or something like that. So I make it entirely optional. And that even just simply taking our attention off the agenda of whatever it is we're doing in the meeting, getting a little physical movement like that brings people's attention back and centers them back on what we're talking about. Now, the other thing that's great about this is it is a large muscle movement, say in our shoulders and back, and that's going to stimulate blood flow in our bodies, and we're not moving around as much in the virtual environment. So it works on multiple levels in terms of getting oxygen to the brain and getting people focused back on the meeting if they have been multitasking. All right, so that number one is take more breaks, and they don't have to be big, long, formal breaks. They can just be little things that you do to get people's attention recentered. All right, number two, cameras on. Now, I am not an advocate of the camera on all day, every day, because that is exhausting. In fact, that's where Zoom fatigue comes from. And there's some neuroscience research that says that even if your bandwidth is amazing and you have really high processor speed that handles video really well, there is still ever such a slight delay between the sound of my voice and the movement of my lips on the screen. Ever so slight, but your brain has to work to stitch that back together. And if you're doing that all day long, it really does get exhausting. So I don't advocate for it all day long. In fact, I think you should have plenty of focus time in your day when you're actually doing your work. Now, I know that for those of you who are senior leaders in your organization, you may have fewer and fewer minutes or hours available for you to do that focus work that you still need to do, whether it's processing email, reading and responding to things, or working on intellectual property work. But there are things to do that are not Zoom meetings. So make sure that you're finding time to do that so that when you're in those Zoom meetings and Teams meetings, you have the mental bandwidth to have your camera on. So also when people have their cameras on, they're much less likely to multitask because they have their cameras on and they're looking at the participants in the meeting. They're not looking off on a second screen doing something else. They're more likely to be present and engaged and accountable. So cameras on, again, not all day, every day, but cameras on in your meetings now. Tip number three, related to cameras on, is hide your self view. Most platforms show a square of what you look like on camera during a meeting. But it's unnatural to watch yourself, whether it's for 15 minutes or all day long. That's why people will turn their camera off when they're eating breakfast in a meeting. And in fact, I'm sure you've heard this. You might have even heard me make fun of this or talk about this. But it just cracks me up when somebody's like, oh, I'm going to have my camera off for a little while because I'm eating my breakfast. Like, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Because in a face-to-face meeting, nobody would turn around and put their back to everybody else while they finish their bagel and their coffee. No, they wouldn't. They would sit there right in the meeting eating. We're not uncomfortable with other people watching us eat. In fact, those of us who have families probably do it at least once a day around the dinner table, sometimes multiple times a day. On the weekends, we sit across the dinner from our families and we eat, or we go on a date, or we go out for coffee with a friend or a lunch with a colleague and we eat in front of them all the time. It happens all the time. So that thing that people are uncomfortable with on a video chat when they're eating is that they're looking at themselves eating. Because when was the last time you sat down and had a bowl of cereal and you watched yourself eat it in a hand mirror? Like, never. In fact, there are dozens and dozens of studies that predate the pandemic that show that there are negative emotional consequences to seeing yourself in a mirror. Specifically, we are more critical of ourselves when we watch our own performance. So this is just as true on Zoom or Teams as it is watching a recording of yourself. So if, for example, you were working with a speech coach and you're trying to get better at public speaking and you gave a speech and it was video recorded, we don't like to watch that video recording of ourselves because we're so hard on ourselves when we watch it. That's why we don't like to do it. It's not because we don't think we can learn anything from it. Absolutely we can. But it's also exhausting on a whole different emotional level because we're so critical of ourselves. So I want you to find a way around that. And that way is to hide your self view. So what you'll do the next time you log into Zoom or Teams is you're going to make sure that you're in the frame. Okay, so make sure you're nice and centered in the middle of the frame and you don't have any spinach in your teeth or anything like that. And then you're going to turn on hide self view. In most of the platforms, it's as simple as right-clicking on your own video feed. And once there are multiple people in the session, so it doesn't work if you're the first one there, it's not going to work. You have to wait until there are multiple people in the session. And then in most platforms, it's as simple as right-clicking on your own picture and then clicking the hide self view option. Now, if you're going to start using this, you might want to normalize it in your team. You might want to talk to the meeting facilitator about having everybody try it and share the research on it. And when you do it, make sure you know how to turn it off and turn it back on again, because there will be times when you want to turn it back on. Make sure that you know how, again, maybe at the beginning of your next meeting, you want to make sure you're in the center of the frame again and that everything looks as you wish it to. I also highly, highly recommend that you put a reminder somewhere visible that you are on camera, but have yourself hidden. So maybe it's a brightly colored post-it note that says camera is on, and you stick it up on your laptop right next to where your camera is, not covering your camera, but nearby so that it doesn't interfere and so that you remember that your camera is on. Because you don't want to do anything embarrassing if you forgot that other people can still see you, whether that's take a call or something else. So hide self view, but practice so you know how to turn it off and on your platform of choice. And, you know, I also want you to do a little study with yourself. Collect some data. Ask yourself how you feel after that meeting, having not had to look at yourself. Maybe you have a little bit more energy. Maybe you can see the results, or I should say, feel the results of not having your camera on. So tip number three, hide your self-view.
This episode is made possible by Instacart. If you haven't already started using Instacart, now is the time, my friend. Now, I'm the first one to say that I actually enjoy a trip to the grocery store. I really do. But you know what I like doing even better? Making this podcast. When I was deep in the development of this podcast, outlining and recording the first few episodes, my kids reminded me that they needed to eat. Instacart to the rescue. In absolutely record time, Magnolia, my Instacart shopper that day, delivered chicken nuggets, milk, avocados, fresh berries, and a host of other groceries we needed. When life gets busy, or when you just want to feel like royalty and have someone do it for you, there's Instacart. Get $10 off your first order when you sign up at workingconversations.com/Instacart. Now, back to the show.
Tip number four, keep your microphones hot if it's a small meeting. And I think you should have a lot more small meetings. And by small, I mean 8 participants or fewer. When you have your microphone hot, those little utterances, and what I mean by hot is not muted. Okay, so a hot mic is a mic that will pick up whatever you say, laugh, guffaw, sneeze, whatever. It all gets heard by the other participants. So we are all accustomed to having our microphone off or muted, that when we do want to laugh or sigh or, you know, make those little utterances, and I've talked about those before in a different podcast episode, and we'll link those up in the show notes as well. We want to make sure that those little affirmations and utterances in our communication to one another get included. So we'll link that other episode up in the show notes. But when we're muted, if somebody says something funny or sarcastic or whatever, and we want to laugh at it, by the time we move our hand to the mouse and get our mouse over to the unmute button, and even if you're super skilled at the shortcuts, like hitting the space bar for mute and unmute, and yes, that's a thing, try it out sometime. Even if you're skilled at the shortcuts, by the time you get your hand over to the space bar and unmute yourself, the moment has probably passed. So when we keep our microphones hot, that is unmuted, we are going to share those little utterances that create the social fabric that knit our group together. And when we're in a meeting setting, especially, and again, it could be that somebody sneezes and, you know, you acknowledge that person's sneeze and you say kazuntite or God bless you or whatever it is that you like to say after somebody sneezes, just those little things. It stitches our engagement together. Now, as a secondary bonus effect, people are less likely to multitask if their microphones are hot, because their microphones quite likely pick up the keyboard clickety-clacking when they're trying to multitask, like answering emails. Now, if you do happen to take a lot of notes during a meeting and you have a lot of clickety-clack going on, you just might pop in a headset with a dangling microphone so that your microphone is away from the keyboard. Otherwise, if you're using your laptop microphone, it might be picking up keyboard noises. And again, I say that in the spirit of if you happen to be taking a lot of notes and typing a lot during the meeting, because it is entirely germane to the meeting. So I like to use a number of about 8 people, give or take. It's not hard. It's not a hard and fast rule. Usually we get more like 8 or 10 people. Then we start getting people who have feedback issues because their microphone is picking up their speakers and things like that. So if this is something that you're going to try to take on in your meetings, if you're the meeting facilitator, give people a heads up in advance so that they can get set up with a headset. And it doesn't have to be an expensive headset. It can be a $10 Sony microphone and headset that just plugs right into your laptop and doesn't have to be fancy. And once we get over 8 or 10 people, the possibility of that background noise and other things feeding into it make it unreasonable. So give it a try and see what happens. And take it on in the spirit of an experiment. So be transparent in your experiment with this suggestion and any of these. So if it doesn't work for you, then you don't have to feel blamed. You can just place the blame on me. I'll take all the blame. You take all the credit. How does that work? All right. So suggestion number 4, keep your microphone hot, especially if it's a smaller meeting, like 8 people or fewer. Tip number 5, and this is especially for those of you who have people who are very active in the chat in your meetings, and that is have a moderator to keep on track with reading what's happening in the chat and keeping the meeting moving forward. So it doesn't have to be the facilitator stopping to read what's in the chat. Now, we're not adding an extra person to the meeting. It's somebody who's already in the meeting and they are just going to keep an extra eye on the chat and then interject to read various things out from the chat. Like, hey, Janelle, I just say that that Jody said that this is a really good idea and she knows where we can get some funding to try it out. So those kinds of things. If there's a lot happening in the chat, have somebody identified as the person who's tracking that chat and then who is periodically going to interject by reading the chat aloud. And of course, not all of them, not all of the chats, but just when there are particularly salient points or when there are multiple people, maybe even chiming in with a similar idea. Person who is in that moderator role can summarize the chat discussion so the facilitator does not have to stop reading. So have that moderator role present and accounted for and have it rotate so that it's not always the same person. This also builds empathy in the meeting because if you've got multiple people sharing that role being the moderator, because it's a hard job and it's hard to know to keep on task and stay present in the meeting. So it's definitely going to keep you from multitasking as well. So have that role rotate and have a monitor who is watching the chat. That is technique number 5. All right. And technique number 6 is to have short meetings. Research published by the Journal of Occupational Health Psychology recently reported that fatigue in virtual meetings is caused by boredom and mental underload, not overload. But underload and boredom was even more pronounced when cameras were off. Again, all of those social cues that I mentioned at the top of the podcast are not as easy for us to catch and pay attention to in a video conference, and they're not there at all if the cameras are off. And this boredom and fatigue increases the likelihood that we are going to multitask, or at least try to stay awake or to try to stay engaged in the meeting. Even if it's not the meeting agenda that we're trying to stay engaged with, we might be working on email or working on some other project, just trying to stay awake and engaged. So make your meetings short. I'm a big proponent of really short meetings, like with just one or two agenda items, and only the people who absolutely need to be in those discussions, just a few people. So that might be 15 or 20 minutes. Now, it might be a slightly larger number of people, and that's fine too. But if you can limit the meetings to just 15 or 20 minutes with one or two agenda items, maybe you're having more meetings throughout the day. And by more, I don't mean more hours in front of the screen. I just mean you have more meetings. So instead of 7 1-hour long meetings, you've got 14 meetings that are 15 minutes with just the right number of people in them. I guarantee the velocity at which you move through things will be so much faster and your day will go faster because you won't be feeling the extreme Zoom fatigue that just may be coming from boredom. Now, how fascinating is that? All right, that was number 6, have short meetings. Now, let me give you just a quick recap of the 6 tips that we just talked about. Number 1, take breaks. They can be breaks right there during the meeting by shoulder rolls or leg stretches or anything like that. Number 2, cameras on. Again, not all day, every day, but cameras on. Number 3, hide your self view, but put up a post-it note or some reminder that you are still on camera and that everybody else can see you so you don't do something embarrassing. Number 4, keep your microphones hot. That is, nobody in the meeting is muted if it is a small number of meeting participants, like 8 or fewer. Number 5, have a moderator, especially for those meetings where chat is very active. And number 6, have short meetings, like 15 to 20 minutes in length with one or two agenda items. All right, as we wrap up our exploration into this world of virtual meetings and specific tips for you, remember that adapting to the future of work isn't just about embracing new technology. It's also about harnessing the technologies to create more meaningful connections and foster productivity. And my assignment to you, and as a former professor, I get to give homework. My assignment to you is to try out at least one of these tips in the coming week. And if you want extra credit, and I sure hope some of you do, email me at Dr. Janelle Anderson with your results. And we'll put that email address in the show notes as well. This is episode 153. So you'll find the show notes at JanelleAnderson.com/153. What you do with these tips matters. It really does, because like I said, video meetings are here to stay, and I'm sure that's no surprise to you. By incorporating these tips into your virtual meeting arsenal, you're not just participating, you're actively shaping the future of collaborative work. Ask others that you work with or are in the same meetings with you to listen to this episode as well and spread the word in your organization, because you can lead from anywhere, even if you're not a meeting owner. You can use these tips yourself. You can talk to meeting owners and meeting facilitators about these tips and suggest experimenting with them. And as we navigate the twists and turns of the ever-changing workplace landscape, let's keep this dialogue open. Share your experiences with me. Share your struggles. Share your wins so that we can all continue to learn from one another. Your ability to adapt and thrive in this digital realm is a testament to your resilience and your commitment to staying ahead. Because remember, the future of work is not just about technology. It's about the values we uphold and the communities we build and the sustainable growth we're all striving for. We need to keep exploring, keep innovating, and keep envisioning the remarkable possibilities that lie ahead. As always, stay curious, stay informed, and stay ahead of the curve. Tune in next Monday for another insightful exploration of the trends shaping our professional world.
Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you're hearing on the podcast, head on over to Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts and give us 5 stars and a quick review. It really makes a difference and it keeps us bringing you valuable content that you can put into play in your life. I'm Dr. Janelle Anderson, and this is Working Conversations.